I got everybody quiet just by speaking. You guys can go ahead and talk. We're going to wait another minute or two. Chris? All right, now we'll get started. Good morning. I call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 13, 2016, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So first item on our agenda, as always, public comment number one, and this traditionally is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. We have a request from Kathy Fromm to address us about an item that's not on today's agenda, and since she would prefer to not wait till the end of the meeting, we're going to go ahead and do it now. Kathy, come on up. Yes, ma'am. You can have one of these chairs into the microphone. The little square is a microphone, or the regular microphone, either one's fine. And start by introducing yourself, please.
I'm Catherine Barbara Fromm. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I reside on a farm of 45 acres. It's the most important real estate in Story County since I frequently deal with a lot of issues for the last 15 years. I work in the Ames Public Schools. I live in California in the winter, where I was born and raised, and I tutor children every day. My father's family of nine children struggled in poverty in southern Iowa on farms in Monroe, Boone, Polk, Mahaska, and Warren counties. My family moved every March. We went to California in the Great Depression, and I'm the proud graduate of California Public Schools, including the UC system, Berkeley, and UCLA, both of which dominate the public ratings. Get that. I have finances like an Episcopalian, and I vote like a Puerto Rican. I'm a 60s child who saw Malcolm X as a college student, and I haven't forgotten where I came from. Now, Rick Sanders is quoted in the Des Moines Register saying Story County's watching other counties and the legislature on the issue of the minimum wage, but haven't discussed it. Really? Tell that to the people trying to survive here with a minimum of $7.25 an hour. And the rate of the poverty in this county is significant. We have food at first, lunches in the summer, breakfast programs. One in four in Story County children gets free and reduced lunch. We take food everywhere, and I take trains to food pantries, including Ames High School, which has a food pantry and a homeless coordinator. You should all familiar yourselves with those situations, especially you, Wayne. Johnson County has vested us in more than football. They were the first to raise the minimum wage. The Register keeps us updated on raises in Polk. The Lynn County supervisors just raised the minimum wage yesterday on the second reading. 825, 2018, 925, 2019, 1025, 2020. That isn't enough, but it's better than what you're doing. The Des Moines Register article, which quoted Sanders about Wapello County and its terrible poverty, does indicate the supervisors there decided to begin the process, and it's going to be almost like Lynn County, since they could not sit idly by. My family came from Uritomo. They come from Eddyville, Melrose. My father graduated from Melrose High School. Some of them worked in Uritomo, so I know about the poverty of Wapello County. But the Story County supervisors don't think this is important enough to discuss. I think you should tell that to the many people in this county who are struggling on $7.25 an hour. The lack of activity on this critical situation at this board table is shameful, disgraceful, and disgusting. I rest my case.
Kathy, thanks. We can't take any action on your comments today due to the requirements of the opening law. I would just point out that this Board of Supervisors has more than doubled its support of those programs that you mentioned. So I appreciate your disgust and disgrace, and have a great day. Anybody else wishing to comment on any item before the Board of Supervisors this morning? Seeing no one moving the microphone, we will move on. Presentations by potential vendors, Infomax and Marco, regarding managed print services Barb is the one who put it on. I'm going to take them in the order we got them. So InfoMax is first. Please come on up. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for this opportunity. We appreciate it. Can you hear me okay? Great. I'm going to quickly introduce ourselves. My name is Sarah Lampert. I'm sales manager at InfoMax and management services specialist. And this is Nate Finley. He is your account manager. And then we also have Randy Schlegel, who is our vice president and been with InfoMax for 38 years now. We're going to be very respectful of the 5 minutes requested. So today, Nate's going to go over what we've accomplished so far, and I'm going to briefly go over InfoMax's background and the solution. Does that sound okay?
Super. Thank you. And thank you for being here. We've got a huge agenda today.
I know.
Thank
you.
So I'm just going to update you first on our project progress, and I'm going to hand it back over to Sarah to talk more about InfoMax as a whole. InfoMax team prides itself on fully understanding the needs of our customers and providing excellent service. Our process to understand Story County's needs and developing a managed print program first began back in July of 2015. Since then, InfoMax has spent 150-plus hours working on developing a meaningful partnership with Story County. This process included a vision and goals meeting, two separate walkthroughs of each building led by Kyle Vess, Scott Fay, Micah Anderson, and Tim Patterson. We obtained a more in-depth understanding of Story County's environment, current needs, and goals. We also obtained average monthly volumes on all devices, including networked, local, and personal devices. We obtained all of the lease agreements, maintenance agreements, and most recent invoices, thanks to the auditor's office. InfoMax completed a print study analysis and then shared the report of findings to the IT department. We strategized an initial solution with the IT department. We then presented to the Board of Supervisors and department heads the progress on our project. And last, we met with the department heads individually with Story County IT to go over department solutions, which were accepted and endorsed. Back to Sarah.
So I'm going to talk about our current relationship and our proven record. So currently, InfoMax works with the Assessor's Office of Wayne, and we started that relationship back in 2006. And since then, the Assessor's Office has been on our InfoMax PrintMax Plus program and has had 3 machines with us. The most recent machine has been in place on our program since 2014. In the last 2 years, the Assessor's Office has experienced 4 service calls, with our average response time being under an hour, and has experienced 99.6% uptime on that machine. 99.6% uptime. Okay. Our program will save the county about $150,000 over the life of the agreement. Our program is flexible, it's easy, it's simple, and it's an agreement between Story County and InfoMax. There's no third-party lease. Okay. You have total flexibility to make volume adjustments throughout the agreement and strategically refresh equipment as needed and as changes. We would take this huge stack of invoices and turn it into one customizable, detailed invoice. I think the auditor's office would really appreciate the time saved there. And it's very easy to add another department to our program. It's just one simple agreement and just turn it into Randy. InfoMax provides Story County with the best value solution. The reliability of Canon, which is the number one manufactured copier company in the world, and our excellent service and our program is why Wayne introduced us to Barb over a year ago, because he's a raving fan. Are we going to be the cheapest? I doubt it, but the best solution really is. We will, however, provide Story County with the most value. Our plan is to help drive your vision and goals and continue to take care of you and continue to earn the county's business and be a trusted partner as an Iowa-based company. We really appreciate the time, and we would love any questions or concerns.
Any questions, Board?
No, I imagine that all of this is just a presentation of the information at this time, and we'll probably be working with the various departments that will be looking to utilize these services at a later time.
And so this is the board's opportunity to hear a real brief synopsis of what's going on, and then we're counting on staff to really dig in and come back ultimately with a recommendation.
Absolutely.
that's correct. And we submitted yesterday a full proposal, and we also have printed versions for you guys that we'd like to give you as well, if that's okay.
Super, absolutely.
We can do it in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Question, Barney.
You say your managed program would save the county just under $150,000. How do you get to that number?
It's a great question. So when we do our assessment, we take a look at the devices, the volume, which accounts for service calls, lease agreements, maintenance agreements, and then also the toner and ink. And based on our findings and then the solution we propose, over the term it will be $150,000 saved. And that's with refreshed equipment. Because oftentimes when you have older equipment, it's more expensive to take care of, and the toner is more expensive, the parts. So by refreshing and putting it on our program, that's how we can save the county money.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question?
Also, the way.
Can you tell me more? I want to make sure that.
Well, I just okay. The life of your contract. Where were we there? I mean, you're proposing to enter into a contract with county on technology here, and the life of that contract would be for
60 months. So it would be 5 years. So it'd be a program between InfoMax and Story County. And we do the 5 years because then with our program, you have the ability to strategically refresh after 36 years. So it takes your payment and it stretches it with the ability to rip it up and start fresh after 3 years.
As technology has been evolving, I mean, we would have machines that would virtually walk in the door on day one, and at some point they would be outdated. I mean, is that something that you would bring to us when you know the technology comes online and all of a sudden you're telling on a service call you're bringing a new printer to us? Is that what I get?
Absolutely, and that's what we've done with Lane in Story County is as you guys have different initiatives. Like right now you have scanning initiatives to go more paperless. Mm-hmm. Those solutions we bring to you, and we do what's called an account review. And Nate and myself would meet. We really strategize with the IT department and Barb to look at solutions and more forward thinking as well. But yes.
So you're following this, we don't have to as a county?
Yes, this is what we specialize in. So we, as new technology comes down and we continue to learn the vision and goals of where the county's direction is, then we meet and strategize and continue that partnership. And it's flexible because it's between us and not a third party. If something drastically changes with the county, you guys are trying to go more scanning and paperless, and all of a sudden the volume decreases by a lot, then we can make that adjustment very easily, and that saves the county even more. I mean, the goal is with paperless, you'll see more savings with our solutions because the less you print, the less money you use.
So I'm remiss in not starting at the beginning as we introduce this. So this was our dear friend Paul Toots. One of his projects that he was really working hard on before his untimely passing. And he had worked hard with Barb all the way through. It was, and I'll use Paul's words, Paul thought it was ridiculous that we had printers all over the place, some of which we owned, some of which we leased. Many of them came from competitors. Some of them we couldn't find the leases on. I mean, it didn't make any sense at all. And so Paul, I think, rightly believed that there was value in having a consistent application countywide, having one contract that served the county, and that's where all of this came from. And now we're nearing, I believe, and Barb, I'm going to have you speak at the end, we're nearing the end of this process where we can actually make a decision. But Marty, that's how we've gotten where we are today. It's been a long, 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 long process to get here.
But do you mind if I say
sure.
One more thing? Marty, another way to find cost savings is the IT department is spending a lot of time on those printers. And their time can be more allocated towards more crucial projects for the county. So by alleviating that burden on them and us taking care of it, then that also saves the county's IT resources.
Yes, it does in about a week. I'm sure Wayne and Rick can probably back me on this one with the fact you get the little memo that it says the printer's offline, it's broken, they have a tech coming. That's just in the supervisor's office. So I don't know how old that technology is, but it seems that it's decrepit.
Well, I hope our printer doesn't come from either one of these companies. But generally what we get in the Board of Supervisors is whatever the hand-me-down is.
Whatever,
yeah, that's right. We get the last one.
I think Barb was taking care of you guys when we were talking to Solution. I think she wanted to make sure to take care of the Board of Supervisors with this program.
Any other questions?
I have no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and next we have Marco. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Jeff Park, and this is Zach McBride.
Hi, Jeff and Zach.
Good morning. And we are with Marco. Thank you for this opportunity. Sometimes it's an advantage to go first. I compliment you on your presentation abilities, and it kind of backs us into being redundant, correct? So I'm going to go through a little bit about what Marco is. You should have received a PowerPoint from us yesterday, from Zach. Zach will answer any questions. He's better versed on the actual RFP response. What Marco is we're an eight-state regional organization. We have 40 locations in those eight states. We have six locations in the state of Iowa. In Iowa, we are in Des Moines, Waterloo, and Fort Dodge from a service standpoint. Right now, over the last 6 weeks, we're trending at 2.06 hours in response time, and that's for the whole patch, not individual. We do quite a bit. You may not have heard of Marco. We're somewhat of a new name in this state. We've been here about 3 years. We have about 120 employees in the state of Iowa. We are not headquartered in the state of Iowa, but we do have 120 employees in the state. Okay. We do quite well in the state and local and also in education. We have Des Moines schools, we have Cedar Rapids schools, and we have Sioux City schools, the top three districts in the state of Iowa. I do quite a bit of that. University of Iowa is also our account and has been for about 8 years. So a little bit different with Marco. We can set you up on zero minimum contracts if you wish. We can do single invoicing because we do all of our own financing. The thing that's nice about the zero, you never have to go back and adjust. You never have to go back and lower minimums. You know, you pay for what you print. Versus semi-annual or annual reconciliations where you come back and you have underages and we're giving you credits and so on and so forth. It's just so much easier to go with the zero minimums. Okay? We are a Canon, a Konica Minolta, and a Sharp dealer. We're the second largest Konica Minolta dealer in the country. We're also the second largest Sharp dealer in the country. With Canon, we offer that product line also, and we have chosen to go with Konica Minolta here for our RFP response to each other. Main reason is the reliability. We can offer anything. We go with what our director of service says. More copies between calls, less travel time for our service tech, more uptime for the county. And so that's why we chose Konica Minolta. And it's about 90% of our sales are Konica Minolta. Okay? So with that, that's the $30,000 on Marco. Any questions?
Nothing on the $30,000.
All right. Yeah, that's a long drive.
Is that anything specific that you want to point out?
Well, we were a recipient of the RFP, I want to say end of July, early August. We responded to that with the information that was provided. Just a couple weeks ago, we went around with Tim Patterson, did a walkthrough of the county, saw some consolidation points, quite a few redundant printers in some office, and everyone seemed on board to refresh their technology. Seems like you guys can kind of, I don't know what best word to use for, but you...
Piecemeal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You've been barely getting along on some of the equipment there. Kind of was a recurring theme. So what we did is we did another walkthrough and then sent, in that PowerPoint that we enclosed yesterday, sent a post-walkthrough recommendation. So the price is a little bit higher than our initial recommendation, but we found some places that were not on the original RFP, like the engineering office and the conservation center. So there were some MFPs that had to be added for those two places. So I think all in all, I mean, there still can be some refinement that can be done if we were to be awarded the contract with Story County, and I mean that's what our goal is. It's to ultimately do what's best for you guys, and then in the end result, it'll be best for us as well. So, is there anything specific over the?
Well, the only question that I would have is just when you look at two different proposals, and you mentioned the fact that with now looking at the engineering department and secondary roads and probably have conservation, that changes your initial assessment when we get ready to compare, we're going to be comparing apples to apples and not necessarily looking at. And so I'm going to be charging staff to kind of look at a comparison between what each company can provide when we look at the dollar figure, as well as you've mentioned some very impressive companies that you're currently doing business with. As you always know, we always like to reach out and find out a little bit more hands-on type of information, references, how those things have worked in a number of years.
Sure.
But did I hear you say you're in six counties now?
We have six locations.
Six locations. Okay, in the state, but you're actually out of
six per commodity.
Right.
And we're in eight states total.
Okay. All right.
Other questions? Thank you very much, Ellen.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Barb, come on up. All right, so we've gotten an extreme overview from the two companies that adequately responded to the RFP. Talk to us about process from here and what your expectation is as far as some kind of recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
We came to you initially because after looking at the RFPs that Leanne helped us get out there, I didn't feel IT should be the only one making the decision. I asked if there were some volunteers that wanted to create a committee. I had four people volunteer, so we've then gone through each response in detail and tried to create a matrix that we could rate them on. Found out it was a little more difficult than we thought it would be. We didn't want to base it solely on price, because you could have a low price and not have good service or quality printers. So we decided to then narrow it down to the two that we like the best and ask them to present to the board, and then we are going to have some demonstrations of the device this afternoon. So hopefully within the next week or two, we will come with a decision and then start replacing printers.
Okay. Yeah, so what I'd like to see is I'd like to see your group, which we're so appreciative of the of those individuals that have given their time to be part of the group evaluating this. We'd like to see you come forward at another Tuesday morning Board of Supervisors meeting with a recommendation between these two where we would go. And then there's really three options, as I see it. The board could take your recommendation. The board could appreciate your recommendation but go the other way, or the board could decide, no, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, which, as we've talked about, is a really hodgepodge system.
Time that we take a look.
So that's where I would like to see us go from here. But I really appreciate you coming forward and giving the board in total an opportunity to hear from the two companies that adequately responded to the RFP, and we appreciate your work on it.
Thank you.
Any questions for Barb before we let her go?
I don't recall seeing it in the Infomax presentation, but Marco said that they'd like to reduce our printer count by 11. Is that correct?
Yes.
And are those just single one-offs, or is that an office, or where? I mean, is this just scattered around the county?
It's scattered around. A lot of times you'll have one desktop printer and then an all-in-one within 20 feet of each other, when really the larger one can do the job for both. So why have both? I don't see a convenience there. And you mentioned your piecemeal. We apologize for all the trouble you guys have had with your printers. We got so many things back from CLP that we hated to throw away. We wanted to see if they would be of some use to us. You don't know when looking at a machine if it's going to work or not. So you guys have been great guinea pigs for us, weeding out the bad stuff from CLP.
No, I know. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Barb?
No.
Barb, thank you very much. We'll look forward to getting a recommendation from you.
Okay, thank you.
Next item, consider and choose an option to fill the county attorney vacancy pursuant to Iowa Code 69.14A and consideration of additional action and timeline necessitated by the chosen option. And do we have Lucy here?
Yeah, I think she is. Yes.
Oh, I didn't see her. Hi, I'm back here.
She came in. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Auditor Martin, good morning.
Good morning. While I get my presentation set up, if I could just make a pitch, we have two special elections in Story County today. So if you are in either Ballard School District or Collins Maxwell School District, polls are open from 12 noon to 8 o'clock this evening. And all Ballard voters go to Huxley 3Cs, and Collins and Maxwell voters can go to either the Maxwell Community Center or the Collins Community Center.
Okay.
So that was my public service announcement for today. So this might look a little familiar. I used the same, I just updated my slideshow that we had to do in May when we talked about the vacancy for county supervisor. There are certain differences, but the format might look a little similar to anyone that was at that meeting. So vacancy in the county attorney's office is the choice of the board. The vacancy is either filled by appointment by the board of supervisors or by special election. Appointment shall be made within 30 days of the actual vacancy, and special election shall be made at the earliest practicable date. And I got a lot of questions about this because there was some confusion. Some people thought that the election also had to be held within 40 days, but it's the code says earliest practicable date. If an appointment is made, the public still has the option to petition for a special election within 14 days of that appointment.
Lucy, the public has two opportunities to petition for a special election, right? They have an option. If the board were to choose to fill by appointment, they would have 14 days from when that was published, and then they would also have an additional 14 days from the time the appointment was made. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that the public would have two options if the board chose to go with a special with a appointment.
I thought it was whichever one is later they can.
No, I think it's either.
All right.
How many names would they need on the petition?
You're anticipating my next slide.
It's coming up. Yeah, in the packet there. Right, the next page.
This is a timeline comparison. They're entering blackout dates for the upcoming general election. So there are also some election processing deadlines, special election date for schools in December, and the contest deadline for the judgment report on federal elections. Looking at all those, I'm saying the earliest practical date is Tuesday, January 10th. Now, practical date is not defined by the Code of Iowa. It's not defined by any opinions or court cases. So
it's the call.
I'm assuming
right?
that it's left up to me, and that's the date that I say is practicable. If that is the option chosen, then the filing deadline would be Friday, December 16th, and the canvass would be the week after the election, and the new attorney would be sworn in immediately following canvass. The appointment, the board would have to publish notice of intention to appoint. That's 20 days, as with any public meeting. Appointment must occur no later than 12 noon on November 9th, and that's 40 days after the vacancy occurs, since the vacancy actually occurs on 12 noon, September 30th. And then the appointee then would be sworn in at appointment time. Citizens may petition within 14 days of appointment to hold special election. Signatures required is 3,285. That's 10% of the total votes at the last general election, which was the gubernatorial election in 14. So, any questions on these items? One quirk about county attorney is the county attorney shall be resident of the county at the time of the appointment. For all other people, they have to live 60 days in the county. And any petition would be filed with the board of supervisors. For a citizen petition. Just a note on all vacancies don't change the terms of the office. It doesn't reset the clock on that. The seat still stays on the same regular schedule as up on the gubernatorial general election cycle. So this is just some dates. If it goes on the January 10th special election, It goes on the ballot as county attorney to fill a vacancy, and the winner on January 10th is elected to the residue of the term. For the appointment, the appointee serves until the next pending election, and the next pending election is November 6, 2018, when the seat would appear on the ballot in any case. So the only thing is if that's being filled by appointment at the time of election, then they're sworn in at canvas instead of at the swearing-in date at the first business day of the new year.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of calendar things to consider. Estimated cost, this is really rough. I'm assuming the use of vote centers because this would be a one item ballot, so that when you use vote centers, any voter in the county can go to any voting location. We've never used vote centers in a countywide election. Talking to my election staff would be sort of a mashup of what we use in school and city elections. I could maybe do it for $25,000, but...
But if we were to run it where we had every precinct...
That would be about $52,000.
$52,000, okay.
If we used all 43.
Yep.
So that's where I got my costs. And then the cost of a special election would have to be borne by the fund balances of either the general fund or the supplemental fund. We do budget for special elections every year, but it's a mirror because we assume those will be coming from schools or cities, and we actually bill out those elections. So if we put $5,000 in expenses, we put $5,000 in revenue, and then if we actually end up spending $2,500 on expenses and the revenues match that, because that's what got billed out to the entity.
Right.
We don't bill ourselves, so it would have to come from fund balances. Appointment, that's just publication costs, overtime for the clerk, if we use night meetings. It's a little different from the group that met in the spring, because you guys have a regular meeting and you already publish everything and you don't have to. There's no additional publication, so it would just, I would think, be folded into a lot of what the county does as normal course of business. Just a little more about the election. If there is a special election, candidates are nominated. This is a partisan seat, so political parties may nominate candidates by reconvening the county convention. And then such a candidate would file a certificate of convention and an affidavit of candidacy. Nonpartisan, they would file a nomination petition of 250 signatures. So it just depends if you are associated with the party or not. The special election, again, earliest practical date, January 10th, 2017. Filing deadline is 5 p.m. Friday, December 16th, and that is in my office. I am the filing clerk. Estimating voter turnout is more art than science, so this is a really rough guess on my part. I would guess 15%, but there are a lot of variables. That includes weather, how many candidates are actually running, because that always, if there are multiple candidates, so you usually see more voters, and then absentee voting activity. If that is encouraged and there are mail-outs, then that will drive up the turnout generally as well. But also the cost. So that's the end of my slideshow. Did you want me to revisit any slides? I'm happy to do that.
Any slides? I've got one. So I went back and looked and tried to find the last time Story County held a special election to fill a county vacancy, and I couldn't find one.
Yeah.
Do you know of any?
Not in recent. Yeah, I have looked at that in previous times and not found one. It seems. When we look at the board, I was specifically looking for board vacancies, but I didn't find one there, and I don't even see, I think, even things for like local option sales tax. Maybe we did a special, or maybe, I think that went on a general election ballot.
It was a special.
Was it a special?
It was a special election.
But that goes back to...
87
then. So,
yeah, so I went one step further, and I looked in Iowa. So over the last 20 years, this is our sixth vacancy of county office in Story County. I went back and looked, and I couldn't find, not saying they don't exist, but I couldn't find any special elections to fill a county vacancy anywhere in the last 20 years. I've asked ISAC for that information, and I haven't gotten it yet, but they didn't seem to think that, it happened regularly.
Yeah, in my reading around in the files, I haven't seen anything, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Any other questions for Lucy?
No. No.
Yes, again.
Thank you. Good presentation. Thanks, Lucy.
You're welcome.
So now we receive public comments regarding choosing an option to fill the county attorney vacancy. I know that Susie wants to speak to us, so Susie, we'll start with you and then see if anybody else wants to speak to us as well. That square one is actually a microphone. If you want to sit in front of that, it'll pick you up pretty well.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Which one picks up best?
Both. Your voice, both of them pick it up. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Susie Petrit, 2011 Duff and Ames. As we are looking at your choices today, you actually have three options, not two. You can do the special election, which, as we have heard, will cost, but democracy is something we should be willing to pay for. A special election allows taxpayers, citizens, to publicly vet the candidates. It is the most small-d democratic. The second choice that you all have is to appoint an attorney who will not run in 2018, but will simply fill the term, the approximate two-year term vacancy. The third choice you have is to appoint an attorney who probably will seek re-election in 2018, but obviously it benefits that person because that person will receive no vetting from the public. Through a public election, and it certainly boosts the incumbency. It is the least democratic, it is the least desirable, and it is the least palatable for voting citizens. In a democracy, we should want to have our voice. The other thing that concerns me is how the waters are becoming muddied. We have Mr. Holmes, the attorney who resigned, who has contributed to Mr. Clinton's supervisor's campaign. We have Ms. Reynolds, whom Mr. Holmes would like to fill his shoes, also contributing to Mr. Clinton's campaign. And we have Mr. Sanders' supervisor, also contributing to Mr. Clinton's campaign. It does look too much like quid pro quo. So I really urge you to do the small d democratic thing and allow taxpayers to vet this person. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Any questions for Susie before she gets away?
No.
No. Okay. Thanks, Susie. Anybody else wishing to address the board on this topic? Last chance. Okay. Let's see. Next is consideration and choice of option or appointment or special election. I'll start. For me, this is one of the things that the three of us are elected to do. In the event of a vacancy, one of our options, and frankly the most utilized option, both in Story County and around the state, is the appointment process. The beauty for us as supervisors is we have to stand before the public every 4 years. The two of you are in the middle of standing before the public right now. I think this is one of our roles. It also coincides with our role of deciding whether we're going to spend less than $300 or potentially as much as $50,000 for something that might receive 15%. And I think that's a high number, 15% participation from the voting public on a Tuesday, January 10th. I am clearly going to come down on the side of appointment, and I would go one step further. I believe that this board ought to endeavor to appoint the absolute best person for the job, and the beauty about the appointment is if you get it wrong, the voters get to vote. I mean, they get to vote in 2 years, their will can be reflected both for that county attorney, but also for the board of supervisors who appointed that county attorney.
I'll go next before you, Marty. First of all, I appreciate your comments, Rick. In my role on board here, I also have the pleasure and the privilege to represent the county supervisors for the state of Iowa. I've served as past chair and president of the supervisor affiliate and currently on the ISAC board of directors. And so I asked other supervisors in other counties and also through the ISAC in terms of this very question that you asked and trying to look at trends and patterns and so forth. I've also, in my tenure, was a part of the appointment process when our current auditor was selected. I would like to say that we did a good job. There could be those that would be disagreeing. I think we've already heard one person talk about the democratic process. Actually, this is part of the democratic process. This is one of the options that we have as county elected officials. We can either appoint or hold a special election. If we choose to not do the special election, then the democratic process says that the citizens have the option of filing a petition and getting the necessary signatures to force that. So that is the democratic process. So it just depends on which part of the democratic process that individuals want to come down on. I'd like to pride myself and this board, not only current board, but previous boards, in making sure that every decision that we made was made with the best interest of the citizens of Story County, and as you said, having the best people serve. I would also like to comment and say that in my 16 years of service, I have contributed profit to every elected official in Story County's campaign financially, if I thought they were the quality of individuals that could do the job. So the fact that, and in the past, I contributed to Steve Holmes, our county attorney, and the fact that he's also supported me in the past and is doing so this year is, again, a reflection of how we have come together as a team in Story County to recognize that we do work for the betterment of the public, and there will be some that may want to question those decisions. So be it. I'm a big boy, and I have broad shoulders, and I think that I'm in a complete agreement that it is in our best interest, or my interest right now, is that we go with the appointment process and then let the chips fall where they may 2 years from now when a person has to run for re-election.
It is not lost on me why you listened to my voice today. It was not a choice. Paul did not leave us because he was tired of the job. The process had to be implemented, and I'm mindful of the fact that incumbency is an electoral advantage, but I will stand on that advantage or give away that advantage here in 6 weeks.
And it's an advantage if you do a good job.
I will stand on my record as I have. Things were brought to you at this table. I think Wayne speaks from the history that he's had, because I think he's been in a position where he has had people taken away from him, starting with Fred Mathiesen through Paul too, on a number of times. When Mary Mosman left the county in 2010, Lucy Martin was selected. I don't think that process served us poorly. She's both a friend and a colleague, and I welcome her counsel. I look at this as being one of those things where I would probably be most comfortable if we had the candidates wishing for the office were brought to us. We selected from them, not waiting for the process to happen. I think the county's attorney's office is one that is of sufficient depth and merit that the sooner that it was led, the better we would be served. I am comfortable going ahead with the process of appointment.
Okay, further discussion. I need a motion.
I would move that we would go with the appointment process to fill the vacancy in the county attorney's office and set the appropriate timeline in place to receive any requests.
And we're going to do timeline in just a minute, so make this just a motion on either appointment or special election
to appoint.
Okay.
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Board has selected appointment as the process to replace the county attorney. Now consideration of process. I've been thinking about this. If we were to go the appointment route, and I would just throw out what I would like to see us consider as a process. I would like to see us come back next Tuesday and set a qualification matrix, which I actually talk about. I'm going to talk about in the next two bullet points down. But I think it is completely reasonable that this Board of Supervisors, since we're going the appointment route, that we say to the citizens of Story County, okay, Lucy told us what's required, right? You must be licensed to practice law in the state of Iowa, and you must be a registered voter resident of Story County at the time of the appointment. That's what is the minimum qualifications. I think we're looking for a lot more than that, and I think it's completely reasonable that if we're sitting in front of the public making a decision, that we very clearly articulate to the public exactly what our preferred qualifications would be. And like I say, we'll talk about that again in a minute. And then I would suggest that we approve that in a formal meeting with full input from the public next Tuesday. I suggest that we set a 10 a.m. September 27th deadline for receiving applications from anyone who's interested in being appointed a county attorney. So that's immediately prior to our Tuesday morning meeting on the 27th. I'd like at that point to have Alyssa Wignall and Lucy Martin confirm for us who the applicants are and if they meet the minimum qualifications as set forth by code. And then we would come back for a special meeting on Friday, September 30th at 1 p.m., which is 1 hour after the resignation of Steve Holmes takes effect. Hear from any of the qualified candidates via presentation and questions from the board, hear from the public, and then ultimately, as part of that meeting, make the appointment. So that's just out there for consideration, just as I sat down and I penciled out the possibility of appointment and what it might look like.
Would you just kind of repeat the time sequences again?
Sure. Okay, so what's happened today on the 13th is the board has chosen to go with an appointment.
Right.
I'm suggesting that on the 20th, we come back and formally adopt, and we're going to talk about this later in this, but we formally adopt some preferred qualifications that we're looking for in the county attorney. Then we would come, then on the, people would have from today until the 27th at 10 a.m.
Okay.
to submit their application. Okay. All applications would go to Human Resources here in Story County. And then we would come back after the deadline on the 27th, come back on the 30th, which is a Friday, at 1 p.m. for a special meeting in this room where ultimately this board would make the decision of who gets the appointment.
Great.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thoughts? Other amendments?
Well, it's very similar to what we've done in the past, and I think that it's certainly very important for us to, well, I mean, it's clear that we need a time a period for other interested individuals to step up and indicate that they would like to be considered, and then we also have a process in place. Not only will they present to us, but the public can weigh in as well. So I think what you've done is you've outlined a very clear direction. I think next week, talking about the minimum qualifications and so forth, that would be something that I don't know if we've done that, if we did that in the past. Trying to think back for the auditor's selection at that point in time, but I think that I can't see it being that many different nuances coming from that, but I do think that there could be a few things, and I'd be really interested to see where that discussion takes us in terms of what type of matrix, what would the three of us be looking for in that position. So I'm comfortable with that.
Marty, comments?
No, I've just thought we are choosing to bring this to ourselves as officials in positions to decide, as has been decided in times past. I will not shirk the responsibility. I welcome it, and we'll let the chips fall where they may. I just wish the best of luck on us in making a wise decision.
Yeah. Okay, so it says consideration of process. I think the process that I'm proposing, this is not a motion yet, this is just a, what I'm proposing is that the board will set some additional preferred qualifications, the board will receive applications, and the board will make the appointment. That would be the process. I left out one thing. Board will set some additional preferred qualifications. Board will receive applications. The board will hear from and question the potential applicants, and the board will ultimately make the appointment. That doesn't have any dates tied to it. That's just the process that I think we've talked about, and I think we need to formalize that if, in fact, that's what you guys
I would move that we accept the chair's recommendation for the process as outlined.
I would second that.
Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Process is set. Now, consideration of setting dates associated with chosen option. I laid those out as I see them for you guys. I'm suggesting that on the 20th, we formally set a qualification matrix. And again, I'm going to come back and talk about that in the next item. Set a qualification matrix. I don't know exactly what would be in that yet. The board would have to determine that as part of the public meeting that we set Tuesday, September 27th at 10 a.m. as the deadline for people to have submitted their applications to the Human Resources Department here in Story County, and that we set September 30th, Friday, at 1 p.m. as the special meeting to hear from, question, and ultimately appoint the next county attorney.
I like the dates as you've outlined it. I think it's fine. Do you need a formal motion?
Yeah, I think we need to make formal motions on all of this.
How soon do you think you'll have that matrix done?
It's sitting right beside me to hand out, no action today, sitting right beside me to hand out and ask it to be on next week's agenda.
Have you had a chance to give some thought in terms of I know we're talking about an elected position, but have you had any thoughts looking at what we've done for other department heads and so forth with Alyssa and HR? Where are you trying to gather some type of information that might be a good matrix to look at for the county attorney's position?
Yeah, so what I looked at, well, let's deal with this part first, and then let's go to that discussion, Wayne. That's the next item on our agenda, and we'll have that full conversation. But not, I'm suggesting not take action on that next part today. What we need to do right now is set the dates for our chosen option, which is appointment.
You looking for a motion?
Yeah.
Maybe you said the 20th of September is our matrix. Or roll out the 27th as our deadline for submissions for applicants to apply for the position and 30th for a determination here for the selection.
All right, so we have a motion to set the 27th at 10 a.m. as our deadline for receiving applications, and the 30th at 1 p.m. as being the special meeting where we will hear from and ultimately appoint the next county attorney. Clear?
Mm-hmm.
Further discussion?
None.
Chitty?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Dates are set. Now, consideration of any additional action as necessitated by chosen option. This is where I want to present to you guys the possibility of an application matrix. I put together a draft. This should be considered just a draft. I have some. Laura, if you mind coming up and grabbing a few here. I don't know if I have enough for everybody, but I think Alyssa can go make copies for anybody who wants them. How this was developed is so county attorneys, we don't work, the board does not work more closely with any elected official more so than the county attorney. That's who we work closest with. Auditor would be a close second. We work with the auditor pretty regularly. But county attorney, we have day-to-day interactions with our county attorney. They are the legal representative of the board. The minimum qualifications of being a registered voter in Story County and being licensed to practice law, in my mind, is not even close to what we're looking for. Additionally, I think it's completely reasonable for members of the public, Susie and others, to have a very clear understanding if this board is going to appoint, which we said we're going to do, of exactly what we're looking for and what's important to us. Clearly, we're going to be judged. Whoever we appoint is going to be judged on all this, and I think it's really reasonable to lay it out there. So I started doing some research on what's required in different public attorney kind of things, and I used my own information of what our county attorney's office does and what I'd like to see as qualifications, and I came up with, like I say, a really, really draft form items that I would like to see coming from having our next county attorney have, and then I just plugged it into a traditional employment matrix that we use pretty regularly in judging interview applicants, in judging. Barb is going to run the copier proposals through a matrix number list. We do this a lot, and that's how I got here. My intent is for us to not have a whole lot of conversation about this today, other than conceptually we like the idea of a matrix, and then giving full notice of to the public for a week. Hey, here's a matrix, here's a draft matrix, we're going to come back and consider this. What we ultimately adopt may or may not look like this, but it would happen with full input. I'd expect people to get up, and if they see something that's in here that shouldn't be in here, or we don't have something that we should be considering, I'd expect that full input for us to ultimately approve, and then it should give everybody who's paying attention a way to score whoever our applicants are. And if the board ends up making some kind of decision with somebody who doesn't score very well on a matrix that we adopt, we've got some explaining to do, right? That's what I see from this. And the other thing I think it does, and I'm sorry to keep going, is I think it clearly says to any potential applicant, these are the things that are important to Story County, and if you don't measure up in at least most of these areas, maybe a good idea for you not to come forward. I think it's fair for any attorney to know what we're looking for, what kind of experience we want, what kind of qualifications we want.
Well, I appreciate receiving this, and obviously in the manner in which we operate today, just getting it the first time today, I'm really going to find quite interested in going through and looking at the different components. I do have some familiarity with the work of the county attorney's office here in my tenure here, and so forth. So I like the idea of what I'm seeing here. I'm anxious to see where this goes next week and what other additional comments we might be seeing.
Absolutely. Wayne, I would just ask you, as our primary liaison to ISAC, I would ask that you talk to ISAC about what they see as qualifications, necessary qualifications for a county attorney. And, I mean, we really, really try hard to lay out there in front of everybody, here's what we're looking for.
Well, I know that there's been two counties that have recently hired county attorneys, and to my knowledge, they've not had anything close to this. So I think not only I will find this to be of interest, but I will certainly reach out to ISAC and see what information they can share as well.
No, I just look forward to what Wayne gets back from ISAC. I think that there might be some additional questions that we might have to be able to put on this.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Shelley, what I would ask is on next week's agenda, you put an item from me at the top of our agenda to consider hiring matrix or scoring matrix for county attorney qualifications. And we'll come back and have the full discussion, including public input, anybody who wants to give input at that time. I don't think that requires any action. I can just put it on our agenda. Everybody has dual notice that it's going to be on our agenda. Anything further on what is now appointment of the county attorney?
Nope. I have no questions.
Okay. Consideration of minutes from both August 30th and September 6th.
Did we get the one question
yep.
clarified that
yep.
I saw on the
all set.
Yesterday? Okay. Then I would move approval of the minutes from August 30th and 9th and September 6th.
I would move to adopt the minutes as presented from August And September 6th.
We got a motion and a second. Discussion? Anything you want to point out? Clinton?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval.
Second.
A motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel action passed. Consent agenda, board, please add road closure 1713 and utility permit 17023.
I would move approval of the consent agenda with the aforementioned additions.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Cheney?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. That leads us to public hearing items. Third and final consideration of Ordinance 245, amending Ordinance 243 by renaming a portion of Grant Avenue to Hyde Avenue in unincorporated Story County. Jerry, no reason to go through the full dog and pony show. Have we received any comments from our first two considerations?
We have not received any comments from the staff or from any of the communication that we made with the city emergency response staff or other individuals.
Okay, and this is on City of Ames' agenda for tonight, their third and final approval. So if we approve this and they approve it, everything south of 190th would be now named Hyde Avenue rather than any of it being Grant, and then north would be Grant.
Correct.
Questions for Jerry? We dealt with this 2 weeks in a row.
No, received no other response. It's fine.
Okay. In that case, let's open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address Ordinance 245. Seeing no one move the microphone, I'll close the public hearing, turn to the board for action.
I would move approval of Ordinance 245 and make it effective as of today's date, 9/13/16.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Jerry, anything that we need to be aware of before we take action?
No. Well, if this gets approved, we will send notices to the property owners that are affected that the addresses will be changed within 30 days to give them time, additional time to respond.
And we're going to waive the $100 fee.
No fee.
Wait, right. Okay. Okay. Clinton?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Ordinance 245 passes with an effective date of today. Jerry, thanks. No other public hearing item. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 1711, amending the Urban Renewal Plan, Story County Urban Renewal Area. Leanne Hart. Hi, Leanne.
Give me 1 minute. Hold the presentation up. The first few slides, I'm going to just breeze through them. The board has seen them several times. But I just want to reiterate them and remind the board and the members of the audience of why we're here and the process that we follow. Story County has an adopted economic development policies that sets forth types of projects that can receive funding through our urban renewal area funding mechanism or using tax increment financing or TIF. Those four types of projects are transportation, infrastructure enhancement, public land and trail improvement, communication, utility infrastructure expansion, and Main Street and Town Center revitalization. So any projects that receive funding by the Board of Supervisors through this process have to meet one of those four types. And again, no tax increment rebate, grants, loans, or assistance are allowed through private business. So you generally see cities and school districts as the primary applicants in this process. And applicants are expected to at least match 25% of the total project cost. So with that background, I'm going to just remind the board of the schedule we've been following. We really kicked this off in early July with the receipt of applications to me, and then the board first acknowledging those applications on the 19th of July. And today is a public hearing. Two items. One is this resolution before you, and then following next is a public hearing on first consideration of an ordinance amending our code of ordinances. And with that, we'd have second and third considerations for those. Today is the only action on the urban renewal plan unless you don't take action. Because we're adding new land, new parcels to the TIF districts, I did take this to Planning and Zoning Commission. Generally, when we add projects, we don't take it, but when new parcels are added to the table, we do. That meeting was held on September 7th, and they did recommend approval of the draft amendments to the Board of Supervisors. I've shown this slide to the Board a couple times, and just going to quickly breeze through it. The sections listed on the slide for the members of the audience are those in the draft plan that are proposed to be amended. Sections 2 and 5 list out the projects, so our five applicants are in there. And then Section 1 does add the parcel numbers to the table for the wind turbines currently under construction. Section 6 is the financing procedures, which adds the dates if you were to add the new wind turbines for January 2015. County financial information is a table that we have to change every year to match the nature of the applications, and then exhibits A and B are in there as well. 2016 urban renewal applications we received. We received five, and I'm going to go through each of those just very briefly. Presley submitted for an all-inclusive playground structure at North Calson Park. The amount requested is $79,500. Total project cost of $106,000. Let me note that what's in the parentheses is the amount that the county would contribute for that. You know, remainder would be the match. Cambridge requested $50,000 for construction of the Cambridge Community Center, $1.9 million cost for that project. City of Collins requested $98,250,000 of a total project of $131,000. It's really two separate projects in one, demolition and revitalization of buildings along Main Street. Story City requested $95,750, which total project cost is a little over $400,000, and this is for proposed improvements to North Park project. Ms. Slater did submit as well for a request of $45,000. Total project cost $60,000, and this is continuing the project, Main Street improvements along Main Street, decorative sidewalk, parking area replacement, and decorative street lighting. I added this slide so the board can get a sense of if these five projects are awarded today, what the totals would be for each community through the past four years of applications. If all five projects are awarded today, over the past four rounds, then a little over $1 million will have been awarded to different communities throughout Story County. You have four alternatives you can consider today. You can approve resolution number 1711, amending the urban renewal plan, Story County Urban Renewal Area. You can approve it with modifications. You can deny it, or you can send it back to staff for any additional modifications or considerations beyond that if you were to take the second option. And so with that, this is a public hearing as well, but before that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for Leanne? I want to note one thing. I want to note constitutional debt limit for Story County is $337,393,765. $337 million, and we currently carry debt of about $6 million. Any questions for Leanne?
I would just like to read in a portion of the letter from the mayor from Collins here today. He couldn't be with us. I don't know if we have a council member here, but he kind of speaks to what this is and what this means throughout the county. I'd like to take this moment to express the gratitude that the city of Collins has for Story County's urban renewal program. This process has been able to create opportunities for towns like ours that wouldn't otherwise exist. It gives us a real chance to do something unique for our county, to help all of our towns become more viable and to improve the world around us one brick at a time. To be blunt, this program has become a game changer for economic development and community improvement, and we're proud to be a part of it. That's how it's seen.
Yep, absolutely. With that, let's open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone interested in addressing the Board of Supervisors as in our consideration of 1711. Okay, we'll close the public hearing. Leanne, can you go back to the slide that shows what what has been contributed and where we would be. Yeah, right there. For many of these towns, not all of them, but for many of these towns,
could you keep the light off when I'm here, please? My iPad's not active. Good.
They don't have the capacity to do some of these. Collins is one I think about. Clearly, Maxwell, McCallsburg, Slater to a certain extent don't have capacity, Cambridge, to do many of these projects on their own. And one of the things that the Board of Supervisors, Wayne, you and I and Paul talked about when we created this program is these small towns are vital to Story County. It matters what happens to them. If those of you who have been in Ziering, Iowa recently, if you think back to where Ziering, Iowa was in 2010 and where it is today, based on a couple factors, I mean a proactive city council, but without TIF, Ziering is not doing what it's doing today. I was in Collins Sunday for a tractor drive, of all things, and Collins, their main street is making tremendous progress, I think largely based on the $150,000 or 50 at this point, but it has spurred projects on Main Street in Story County, and I think that was the goal of this program. I think it's a really, really good program. I think our small towns are benefiting, and I hope that this and future boards will continue this practice. Further questions or comments from the board?
I have none. And Wayne, do you have anything?
No, as I said earlier, going in prior to today, my one concern was the Slater application and the timing that brought forth. What I was pleased to understand is that all the requests received, that we had the capacity to meet all of those. And if you, Marty, you wouldn't be familiar, but in the past, we oftentimes didn't necessarily award the full amount requested. We gave a portion of that, and we used some percentages along the way. And so while I've had some concern, one of the things that I struggled with was the fact this was over a holiday weekend period. Even though there was not the opportunity perhaps to contact our office or their office to find out if the information, the bid was received or the information was received in a timely manner, was problematic. I chose not to really penalize, even though my gut said that they should not be given the same. What I would say, and I can't predict the future, but if I'm sitting in this seat in the future, if they do not meet the deadline, there would be some reduction. I don't think I would grant the full percent of their asking request. But under the circumstances where I'm at today, I would go ahead and accept Slater's request, as I would the others that are submitted without any reservation.
Yeah, Wayne, so I think you're 100% right. I think the reality that we have the capacity this year to grant 100% of what was requested, then it came down to me, are they worthwhile projects? Now, you point out Slater, and you rightly point out Slater. What we did with Slater is we had them run along a separate track of the process. We didn't consider them at the same time as the others, and had we not had enough capacity to consider everything, there's no question in my mind I would have judged Slater more harshly than I would have judged the other project. We have enough capacity, so then it came down to, are these worthwhile projects that have a positive impact in our communities that are not going to likely, in many cases, get done without major participation from the county? And I come to yes on all those. Slater's Main Street is looking outstanding. I mean, the work that they're doing, what Slater's becoming, and I'm proud that the county can be part of that. And so, Wayne, I appreciate your stance, but I think it's right to note that we did consider them on a different track than we considered the other four proposals.
I would agree with that. And to that end, I would tell Leanne on a going forward basis that
Slater was fortunate this year that we had the monies to provide funding, but I would like that communicated on that group, because what surprised me when Slater spoke before us and then you followed up, as you said, that you're used to getting the applications virtually the week before the deadline. And I would think that the cities would be probably more capable or within their ability to put these applications in on a much sooner timeline, so that it wouldn't come to that. I don't disagree. I think Wayne's got a very good point to make when he says that, you know, we are sitting here granting a mulligan, and in fact, they fell outside, whether it was their fault, our fault, nobody's fault. But I'm willing to go on a one-year basis that way. But going forward, I would probably look a little more harshly on any municipality that did not meet an obviously clear and prior year dated requirement.
Further questions or comments? I take a motion on Resolution 1711.
I would move to approve Resolution number 1711, amending our urban renewal plan for Story County.
Second.
I have a motion and second. Further discussion? Key.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1711 passes. That leads us to first consideration of Ordinance number 242, amending Chapter 8 of the Urban Renewal Plan of Story County.
Just for the benefit of the audience, because this is an amendment to our Code of Ordinances, I just want to outline the process that was followed for this. Section 1.11, subsection 2, is the ordinance adoption procedure for the Code of Ordinances. It has a four-step process that we follow as staff to bring ordinance amendments to you, and that was indeed followed with this application before you. The effective date is specified that it becomes effective upon publication, unless there is a subsequent effective date provided by the ordinance or the amendment. This is an amendment to Chapter 8 of the Code of Ordinances that is entitled Urban Renewal. The purpose of that chapter is to really delineate how taxes that are levied on taxable property are divided through the urban renewal area designation that's applied annually, looking at the benefit of state, county, school districts, or other taxing entities such as DMAC, etc. That's the purpose of that chapter. And then the definitions that are put forth, the definition chapter in the urban renewal section then delineates those properties that are fall within the TIF, the taxable properties. They right now are the demonstration wind turbines in Grant Township, just southwest of here, southwestern Nevada. The better equipment property at the intersection of Highway 30 and 590. And then all of the original wind turbines that are under the ownership of Story Wind LLC and Garden Wind LLC, those are the ones located in northeast Story County. And they are in a table that I did not want to list out for everyone. And then in October of 2013, we added additional wind turbines. Hamilton Wind Energy, these are at Story City. And then there's some intermixed with the original 120 some that were the mixed air energy properties, but different ownership. And then there's one down by Maxwell under the same ownership. So the properties proposed to be added this October. That is when the publication will become effective with the paper, and that's why it says October 2016 rather than September. There are five turbines in the Nevada School District, located in Grant and Nevada Township. And then there are two turbines in the Ballard School District, both located in Palestine Township. And this is a map that shows where those turbines are. Roughly you can see the locations on that. And the alternatives for you to consider, you can approve first consideration of Ordinance number 242, amending Chapter 8 of the Urban Renewal of the Story County Code of Ordinances, with that second consideration for conformance. You can do the same action that modifies the proposed ordinance. You can deny first consideration, or you can amend it back to staff for additional consideration.
How many commercial wind towers do we have now in Story County, including these?
I think there's 138.
And all of them except for these are part of the program. And the reason these have not been part of the urban renewal program is they're new.
They were approved through a conditional use permit several years ago, in fact, but they just started construction this earlier this summer and expect to be completed by October.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of any more being proposed for construction here in the county?
Any other questions for Leanne? We'll open the public hearing and ask if there is anybody who would like to address Ordinance 242. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. Turn to the board for action.
I would move that we adopt the first consideration of Ordinance 242, amending our Chapter 8 of our Urban Renewal Plan.
Set second consideration
of September 20.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Ordinance 242 passes on first consideration. Second consideration is set for next Tuesday, September 20th. Additional items, discussion and consideration of continuity of operation, plan continuity of government, COOPCOG, and worth a note, we may go into closed session depending on where this discussion goes. There are items of the continuity of government plan that are not for public. And if we, I don't expect that that's going to happen, but if we get to that, we'll hold an item and go into closed session to specifically discuss that item. But, like I said, I don't think we're going to get there. Leanne.
Okay. This has been in the making for the past year and a half, so I'm pleased to bring this forward to you. This is the first iteration of a COOPCOG that Surrey County has possibly taken action on. COOPCOG is continuity of operations and continuity of government. As Rick mentioned, there are areas in this document that are considered confidential, and I will address those areas as I go forth with the presentation. Just a few slides for some background information, and we'll delve right into the plan. Please feel free to stop me as you have questions as I go as well. I'm going to start with a very cautionary statement. Just because we're here today and because we're meeting the purposes of the COOPCOG plan and doing this exercise doesn't mean we will ever be fully prepared. And I want everyone to understand that the key is adopting a plan but then making sure it's a living document and making sure the staff is training and that we always keep in mind that we are never done. It's always going on and on and on. Some benefits of doing COOPCOG planning, we can anticipate threats, we can adapt to some changes, we can increase how we perform in that time that we're doing different types of operations. We can determine where our vital resources are and then improve communications. This is the slide I shared with the board when I actually brought this to the board a couple of years ago. And I meant to see if it was updated because it's now a 10-year-old study, but I think the numbers are probably very similar. The only change I would imagine has increased is the technology risk, and the other two are lower ones, so maybe decreased. But what this shows is 34%, roughly 35% are that is the people form the weakest link when we're looking at continuity planning, continuity of government. And then the next is the 26-27%. I'm not planning, not looking forward, not anticipating what steps are. What that shows is how important it is to do the training on and do this planning exercise. Program committee was set up. This was based on direction by the board of supervisors. You assigned this task to me to bring forward the plan but work with the program committee. I do want to say thank you to everyone that was involved in that. They're lengthy list, but I also want to thank Keith Morgan immensely, too. He was kind of my go-to guy, and several times said he was acting as my consultant on the process. I hope we don't have to pay him a consulting fee, but the program committee really assisted by doing the worksheets, but then being the sounding board to talk things, issues through, talk about what should be confidential, what shouldn't be, and some rationale behind that. They were appointed by elected officials or department heads, and the direction that was given to elected officials and department heads, that individual needs to have access to that, the elected official department head, to make sure what's put on paper is actually what can be brought to fruition.
Well, Leanne, before you go much further, you mentioned Keith Morgan, and I would be remiss if I didn't echo those sentiments. Mike, when we hired Keith, one of his very first actions was to talk about eventually what we've got here before us now, that this was something that we needed to be thinking about. He reminded us time and time again after Joplin and several of the other communities faced this, and we recognized even the problems that Linn County had with the flooding and so forth, that we needed to address this. And so, Keith, your persistence in this particular matter helped us, I think, recognize that in order for this to happen, we needed to have somebody who could pull this all together, who could work with you and to bring something together. And I think decision to move Leanne into our outreach coordinator's program has enabled her to use her expertise in such a manner. And as I was reading through this time and time again, your footprint is certainly all over this. And Leanne, the two of you together, this is really an outstanding presentation. And I'm going to tell you beyond a doubt, it's going to be another something that you're not going to want to hear me say, but this is an example of something that I want you to apply to the NACO Achievement Award for recognition on.
And just on that note, Keith has asked me to present to ISAC, but to both the board supervisors group and affiliate and the auditors affiliate. So we have a presentation in KUCOG that will be done with a couple other jurisdictions. This slide, it just shows the process we went through to develop this. Really, the risk assessment was not necessary to do. That was done with the hazard mitigation plan. Also, multi-hazard mitigation plan adopted a few years ago, but we did do business impact analyses, resource needs assessments, agreements, which we'll still do, and then performance objectives. Followed some templates from FEMA and some other resources to, for those members of the program committee to address these areas. Throughout the document, there's a footnote that says that there's material considered confidential under Iowa Code Section 22.7, subsection 50. And then in the beginning, too, there's a blanket statement so that the public is aware that there are certain areas. If you want to remind the board, as was said in the beginning, if there is an area that you do want to talk about, that is one of the redacted sections, we need to go into closed session. Closed session at the end.
Yeah, let's just take a minute here, Leanne. So primarily, what's redacted out of here are lists of resources and assets that the county has, contact private contact information for both individuals and vendors, and places we would go that just is not appropriate for it to be public information. And it's a lot of pages that are redacted. It's just because we have a lot of that kind of information.
Great segue to the next slide. Those four sections that are considered confidential are the essential functions, the alternate facilities, the vital records, and then the annexes, which are the individual department and elected offices, KUCOX, and like you just said, personal cell phone information, vendor information, alternate facilities. We have some agreements with other entities that we may need to relocate if necessary. Those are identified and vital records. So what is necessary to maintain our essential functions? Those become areas that we need to maintain confidentiality so that they, quite honestly, don't become a target one way or another. So again, I have on the slide, if it's one of those sections, it's that big red box, so we know that question will have to go elsewhere. Throughout the plan, you see this blue R. That's just a reminder to elected officials and department heads when they're reading through the plan, just either after activation or just keeping up to date on it. This is a particular area they need to know and know that they have responsibility to make sure we do this to make sure that this plan is as successful as can be. I won't go over all that, but I do want to say the partnership is the key and communication is key throughout this entire process if we were to ever activate this plan. Plan overview, continuity planning is a four-phase cyclical process, and the plan goes into this and into more detail, but it starts with readiness and preparedness, goes into activation, and we go into continuity operations, whether that's alternate facility or just in a different format in the current facilities and then reconstitution. Then it starts all over again. It's a continuous cycle. The purpose of the CUPOG is, I hate to do this, but I want to read this. It's to allow Story County to continue to provide essential functions and services in the event of a total or partial loss of its facilities, infrastructure, and or available personnel. Every effort will be made to continue to provide prioritized essential functions, those where even a temporary interruption would negatively impact the county's ability to provide for the safety of the public and fulfill the requirements of laws, statutes, or ordinances. While it is accepted that non-prioritized functions may be temporarily curtailed for the operations period of this plan. It allows us to get and go. If we lose a building, if we have a pandemic, a flu pandemic where staff is not available, it allows us to at least provide essential functions to the citizens of Story County. It defines what our priorities are in that type of an event and situation.
And so I'm going to stop you there for just a minute. One of the things, and Wayne did a good job phrasing keep that need to have swelled heads. Take it easy on that. We have the finest emergency manager director in the state of Iowa, easily. But one of the things that Keith has dehomed with the Emergency Management Commission, I think appropriately, are places like Joplin, like Tuscaloosa, Parkersburg here in Iowa, even West Texas. They hit home time and again that you're never wasting time by having that first piece of the puzzle put in place, right? It doesn't mean that anything's going to be easy. If we're dealing with some kind of dramatic event like this, it's all going to be hard, but you've got the first piece of the puzzle in place where you at least know what your first move is, and it's key. And so I'm appreciative that we're to this point today.
Okay. I'm not going to read this slide. This slide just defines the objectives identified in the plan, building on the purpose statement I did just read to you. The plan does go forward and identify steps for maintaining it, make sure the sections are relevant. What is required is annual reviews by elected officials and department heads, and I set a date of August 1st for the board to receive a formal report. That date is specifically chosen because it's a month after that we start new fiscal year. So they can go back and look where occurred the past fiscal year and then look and see if any purchases may be necessary before we go into budgeting. And then on a five-year basis, it's a whole-scale formal review done internally. Annually, though, the expectation, the plan is similar to what we do with the strategic plan. I would take those reports from elected officials and department heads, bring them forth to you, and if we notice anything that really needs modified, we need to take action to do that. So that would occur in the fall of each year.
So tweaks of the plan every year, every 5 years, we dig in and look at wholesale of things.
The essential functions. I'm not going to read this, but these are the questions that we used through the worksheets, through my review, through working with the program committee to identify what are our essential functions. Is it necessary to do this when we have to do this? Especially when we have staffing needs, we have possibly needs to move to alternate facilities and so forth. So these are questions that we went, and they're reiterated on this slide on purpose because I want to point attention to the table on the right-hand side. We need to look at what can be interrupted for first, what cannot be interrupted for those first 12 hours. And then we build from there up to 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 7 days, and then what can we operationalize within that 30-day time frame? And that is what sets forth really how we prioritize our essential functions. So pages 15 to 27 of the draft plan before the Board of Supervisors are considered confidential, so any questions on that section would need to go into closed session. I'm going to jump ahead to risk assessment. This was the easiest part of the plan to develop because there is an amazing Story County multi-jurisdictional multi-hazard mitigation plan updated and amended in 2014 that identifies 23 hazards, and that is just adopted by reference to the CUPOG. Budgeting and acquisition of resources is necessary to identify these because quite honestly, there are some necessary improvements or investments that Story County will need to make sure that we are adequately prepared. We'll be bringing these forward with the budgeting that we undertake in December. And then we actually may need to have the ability to acquire emergency purchases too, and so we need to address make sure our policies allow us to do that and be able to sustain operations up to 30 days or maybe even longer or less. I guess up to you says less. Resource management of activated plan is the next section. The list of the model of the interagency review team that has been really successful here in Story County at a larger scale of the department head elected official scale. If you look, county attorney should be a bullet point, but the first five up there are the elected officials. This is the KUPCOG management team, the CCMT. They're really kind of the guiding, if we're activating this plan, they're the guiding group, working part and parcel with the Board of Supervisors. Then we have the Director of Internal Operations and Human Resources, the Director of External Operations and County Services, and then the County Outreach and Special Projects Manager. Their purpose is to ensure careful coordination and collaborative resource management so that these services may be provided and that Story County recovers successfully. Again, modeled after the interagency review team at a much larger scale. They actually assemble daily, whether that be digitally, email, phone, in person. So many factors would go into that, and that would need to be determined at the time that we're facing the situation. And they help prioritize how our resources are being best deployed. Does Department A need staff to even get up and reconstitute it, or does Department B need this and be able to really weigh the costs and benefits of the decisions that are being made and funnel that through the CCMT coordinator to the Board of Supervisors to ultimately make the decisions?
Yeah, let's just be clear here. This does not... should not be taken to imply in any way, shape, or form that the Board of Supervisors is interested in being involved in the day-to-day decision-making or activities of our other elected officials. What it is intended to do is bring a group together that can help determine what the needs are, because ultimately the Board of Supervisors is the entity that is going to deploy county resources. Right? Yes. The sheriff is going to be responsible for determining what the sheriff's office needs to do for public safety, and the board has no place in that. We do have a place in deploying the necessary resources to get that done, and the best way, at least from my view, to pull that together is have that full team that communicates on a daily basis, making sure that we're fully aware of what those needs are. I was just concerned that that might look like that the board, in an emergency, the board's going to come in and start trying to tell other elected officials what to do. That's not it at all.
And actually, to build on that, annexes A through R are specific to each department, and that having those in the CCMT organization, help make sure that the decisions that are made at all levels are not being contradictory, nor are they really depleting our resources to such an extent that our basic essential functions cannot be manageable. I may use the pointer that someone left here. I want to just spend a second on this second bullet because we, through this, I've already said we have a CCMT. We also have many other paths to wear. We have to make sure our departments are up and going, but we also have to staff the EOC, Emergency Operations Center. This does not replace that staffing of Emergency Operations Center.
Right.
And so it will be key to make sure that people are well aware that they're wearing 2, 3, 5, 10 hats and we're in the situation that we're activating the KUPCOG. My position, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, serves as the CCMT coordinator, make sure that the communication is being adequate between the Board of Supervisors and the Chair of the Board of Supervisors and the CCMT. There's six responsibilities and duties that the CCMT coordinator does. And the activation policies and procedures is the next section I want to talk about. The plan puts forth that we'll use two methods to notify if we are activating the KUPCOG and looking at alternate facilities. We'll be establishing a calling tree, so for board supervisors, so elected officials, department heads, and staff. We have this. So formalized action, though, that we take, and then really using Story County Iowa alerts. Keith in Emergency Management uses this for notification of EOC, and I spoke to him. He said this would be appropriate use for that as well.
We can just build our own pod in there, right? That can notify exactly who we want to notify, when we want to notify.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do want to just say, too, that the responsibility of the elected head and official is predetermined in the annexes, but how the lines of succession are going and the delegations of authority. So through that the alert notification, if an elected official is not available, we'll know who that notification should go through because we have this plan in place. Individual elected officials and departments are responsible to establish when they're ready to go to alternative facilities, working with the CCMT and ultimate approval by the board of supervisors or the chair of the board. If we're going to alternate facility, we don't necessarily want a department to get there, call the tables up, take all the computers, take all the resource pens and pencils, and then everyone else and say, I'm ready to go, and we still have staff trying to come in. So again, it goes back to that partnership and close collaboration and communication and coordination amongst all the departments. And that's why the CCMT is there to assure that. In the plan, there are sets of tables that predefine equipment and supplies by building and or by department. The supplies are by building, existing county facilities, and then the equipment is by department, county department. I just want to kind of note, these are suggested amounts. You know, I don't want someone to see the number of pens and pencils that we say are necessary, that's cement, written cement, we can't vary from that at all. But we need to have a number to start from as we get into budgeting and looking at the acquisition of these resources. Supplies are also pre-positioned or hand-carried. They're just some things that have a life shelf or I can't think of the word. That shelf life, like batteries, they expire. We don't want to go out and purchase 24 packs of batteries and not ever use them. So knowing that there are some supplies we'll have to acquire through that emergency provision is what the goal is of this section. Staff readiness and preparedness, I just want to spend a moment on this. What's key is not only that we, as a county, are preparing, that we give the message to employees that they need to take time to prepare with their own families. Because I'm going to use myself as an example. If I'm brought here to do this and I have kids at two different schools, I need to actually be responsible in that and wearing several hats. And if I don't do my due diligence to make sure my family is accountable, I'm going to be distracted and not adequately prepared to help Story County manage the situation. Alternate facilities, again, we'll talk. There's three things we look at: existing space, virtual offices, which I'll talk about when I get later in the presentation as a step that we need to do, and then co-locations and other locations. This is, again, is one of our confidential sections, pages 43-55 of the plan. I do want to tell you what was used to identify the alternative facilities. This is not private confidential. We've looked at construction, and what we'll do is on an annual basis use this to determine whether or not that alternative facility is manageable and meets the needs of Story County. We looked at construction specifications. Everything from convenience and comfort, if necessary, shower facilities, toilets, etc., public access and meeting space needs, transportation and parking, interoperable communications, physical security and safety controls, life support, and then logistical support. So those categories were looked at really using the Pullen criteria on the slide that I won't, it's pretty redundant to what I just said. Once we've decided that we cannot use a facility, we need to go into the constitution step. And that's when we're relocating within that first 24 hours. Again, this goes back to strong partnership and the lines of communication, keeping them open, making sure staff knows where they're going, how they're going, what's happening. When we go to The facilities management director serves as the reconstitution manager. That individual really is there to make sure that, again, the coordination is occurring. As I said, we don't have one department sitting up in the alternate facility ready to go and publicizing they're open for business and everyone else trying to get over there. The procedures really work hand-in-hand with emergency management coordinator and the CCMT, and then final decisions by the board of directors that we are on to that next step. And this is very difficult to read up there, I know, and I didn't put there. I just wanted to reference page 56 of the plan. It's really the steps we go through, the process time frame, moving to alternate facility, and then as we get through the 30 days or whatever time frame, we're returning to normal, what the new normal becomes for if we're rebuilding a building where we are beyond that 30 days. Orders of succession are key. They identify who the suitable personnel are. If an elected official or department head is not available, if that position is vacant, those are in annexes A through R. What is so those are confidential, but what is not confidential is the order of succession for the board of supervisors. At the program committee, we had some discussion on this. There was ultimately the direction given to me to share with the board that we feel this should not be confidential. And I'll quote Keith on this. We know if the president is not available, but the lines of succession at the federal level should be, so we should hold ourselves to the same standards. So. But it is a little bit different with elected officials and department heads because they're against personal information in that section. But the Board of Supervisors continues to lead Story County. If the board chair is not available, falls to the vice chair, the chair responsibilities go to the vice chair. So you still have two members of the Board of Supervisors able to make decisions. If those two individuals are not available, it falls to the remaining supervisor to become the chair of the board, and then in conjunction with the CCMT, all the elected officials and the director of internal operations and external operations. If that last supervisor is not available, it's the CCMT. There is nothing in the Code of Iowa about lines of succession for a board of supervisors.
So if we ever get to that, it's going to be very, very difficult to legally make any kind of decision.
Yes.
But it's good that we have some kind of recognition as to day-to-day operations, how that would be addressed until appointments or special elections are held.
Right. And the plan does reference the section as the board will know, used to appoint or have a special election with the vacancies on the Board of Supervisors. But again, Code of Iowa is silent on orders of succession for Board of Supervisors. So this was the approach that we felt best delineated an opportunity to keep the decision making going until we get to that CCMT where it does get a little fuzzy what type of legal decisions can be made. We're at that section. If that far deep in the order of succession, it's a very difficult situation in and of itself. Delegations of authority. There are some instances in the annexes, too, that the delegations of authority can go hand-in-hand with lines of succession, especially when we have smaller departments. The line of succession and the delegation authority may be the same, or be with the same individual. But again, the authority may decision activate becomes that authority goes to alternate staff members when that primary person is unable to do the duties. Next section of the plan is human capital. This talks about the policies that are necessary to make sure that we have the staffing and the policy, the most correct policies to make sure that we're doing able to staff the CUCOG plant, CUCOG activation. There are some policies that I'll talk about shortly that we'll need to do some work on and tweak them because there's some uniqueness to them when we're talking about activation of CUCOG. Vital records is on pages 63 to 73. Those are the confidential pages, but these are three main categories: emergency operations, disaster plans, or CUCOG, as you see, is a vital record. staff contacts, cloud operations, delegations of authority, access codes, passwords, all those are vital records, and then legal and financial data, everything from payroll to property titles, deeds, and so forth. Interoperable communications. Our goal, to the greatest extent possible, is to get, make sure we have necessary and required communications and ITs within, IT capabilities within 12 hours of continuity activation. That is a very lofty goal, especially if cell phone towers are affected. If our fiber is not available and our internet access is not, but it's a goal that we need to set. We need to set that mark high, and because our IT operations drive so many of our essential functions. But the goal is to sustain continuity of communications, looking at both communications internally and externally, and that we have availability and sufficient quantity of media at our alternate sites. So there is some pre-programming that will occur through this plan's implementation at alternate sites. Make sure that those in transit to alternate sites have a way to communicate as well. And we have, like in a pandemic situation, we have a way to distance ourselves to alleviate the spread of whatever is facing Story County. Making sure we have methods to communicate with our customers. If phones are not available and internet is, putting a message out on social media or whatever that, hey, we don't have phones here right now. If you need to reach us, use this means. Making sure that departments have access to vital records, and then everyone is actually trained in whatever systems we need and whatever equipment we have. Going on to a training exercise. Story County annually is going to plan and document our tests and training as part of our strategic plan, beyond just our COOP COG. And then based on our training, we'll see what needs to be addressed within the 6 months time frame to hold ourselves accountable. The plan does have a set of metrics and considerations that department heads and elected officials and the board will use to determine how successful we are with our mechanisms to implement. And actually, the first training will occur tomorrow through safety training day. It'll be a really modified training and just an opportunity for the staff to be aware that we've done this. So throughout the plan, the board and the public can see different action steps. There are no boxes, generally at the bottom of a page. I'm not going to read all these, but they're set out that they're within 3, 6, 9 months, 1 year, and then just in general. These are all action steps that the Board of Supervisors with adoption plan commits taking to make sure that we can, if need be, successfully implement this plan. Again, keeping in mind, it's not perfect, and nor should it or will it ever be, because the situation we may face will be different and our needs will continue to grow. I'll be glad to go over these individually if you want me to just address any questions. I lump them all together at the end, too, just as the plan does. Annexes A through R, which is from page 91 on, through a couple hundred pages, basically, are the individual COOP COG plans, and those are considered confidential as well under Section 22.7, subsection 50. Wow. So are there any questions? Again, if there are questions for those four bullet points I have up there, those four sections, those will necessitate a closed session. So I'd be glad to answer any other questions.
Questions for Leanne.
I might have questions in regards to, if somebody asks, when we go to the activation phase, if we were to go to that, and the board is dealing with the CCMT, would we, and maybe Jessica could speak to this too, be subject to Iowa Open Meetings Laws?
Yes. In most.
That is a question I had not anticipated. That is a very good question.
Somebody always asks.
That is a very good question. So there is an emergency provision of the Open Meetings Laws that does allow an emergency situation for the board to meet publicly without the 24-hour notice requirements. And we need to implement that. We make a record of that. I'd be available to the board, obviously, and we'd make a clear record on why we're meeting and why we're unable to post notice subject to.
Yeah, so as part of the CCMT, I would imagine that would be one of the county attorney's responsibilities is making sure they're providing adequate legal guidance to what are the appropriate ways to make decisions. I mean, I think Tuscaloosa, when Tuscaloosa basically got wiped off the map, or a large majority of it, the last thing you're worried about is open meetings trying to make decisions of how to provide resources. But we better be paying attention to all of that.
Yep, I'd be available for that.
Yep, thanks. Other questions for Leanne?
No, absolutely.
No. What's a driveway kit? Tell me what's in a driveway kit.
A driveway kit is specific to the apartments. I mean, go to the list.
I don't want you to go to the list. Give me that.
It's beyond those daily supplies the department needs. I'm going to use myself for example.
Mm-hmm.
In my driveway kit, I'm going to have my floodplain management tools of the trade. I'm going to have my scale, which people don't realize I use. I'm going to have my measuring tape. I'm going to probably have my boost in my driveway kit. I'm going to have my floodplain management ordinance. Even though it's a vital record, I want it with me. I don't want to have to rely on the internet for it. I'm going to have my access database on a flash drive. I'll probably have a change of clothes in there. And just looking at floodplain management in that regard.
Okay, so what you need, what you determine you need in order to be able to continue to do your job.
Yeah. And it's not those daily supplies or the equipment that the department would need. It might just be very specific. It might be just hard hats that they would want to have pre-positioned in the building, not have to worry about dealing with, and just know that they're available to help them ease into going up and running.
Well, let's say that Keith and his staff, of course, always alerts us to potential weather threats that could happen. But assuming that we get a report of the potential of an F5 tornado or something that may be coming this way, we would want to immediately begin to prepare and put people on notice that they need to be ready to respond as quickly as possible if it did materialize. And so as I'm thinking about these and this toolkit that you talked about, is this something that we need to go through and talk to various departments about? What are the essential things that you ought to be making sure that you have that you could quickly gather, even if you got a little suitcase or someplace that you know that you could just grab and all that stuff is could be put in and secure? How do you envision us having people aware of that?
There are a couple action steps. One is within 6 months of adoption, each department shall have established driveway kit. I'm assuming I will be the one working at each department.
Good assumption.
To identify ahead of time, it's beeping.
Yeah, just let it be. We've talked too long.
Okay. To identify.
I've got that button right here.
What they need in their driveway kit and doing the purchase of those necessary. If they do feel like they need something that if that fire's heading right for here, that they can take and identify who's responsible for taking it. That and each department elected official needs to do an activation checklist too. And actually becomes part of your driveway kit too. And it's become one of your ideas being laminated, being available for all staff. So in predefined responsibilities. So when that email comes from Keith that, hey, everyone, do what you need to do. We have an F5 moving this way. Possibility of F5. Then everyone goes into action. And the key, though, is you can only train or plan as much as you can. We're going to have to train on this. We're going to have to do a lot of, and not just listening to people talk, a lot of table talk, full-scale exercises. And I know Keith and I have talked about this and what this may take, and it's in our strategic plan to do it. It's going to take a long, solid commitment to make sure that this is always in front of people, too. And then I'll be honest, it's not an easy you said that F5 tornado is coming this way. That scares the beavers on me because I live three blocks away and I know what's going to happen to my house if this building goes. It's not a pleasant topic to talk about.
Well, if an F5, if we identify an F5 headed this way, the only thing we're telling staff at that point is take cover.
Yeah.
Then we're going to worry about what we do after that.
Right.
But we've got a full activation of the EOC coming in the spring. Is that right?
Keith? Yes.
Use the microphone since Leanne wore that one out.
Yes, sir. And some of the stuff that that your staff has learned by being a part of the EOC, I think they'll be a lot more comfortable with these kind of activities because we put them under pressure when they come on down. So many of those activities that we do for our full-scale activation of the EOC should get them to thinking about how are we going to do this. You've got to practice it. That will identify what you forgot to put in your kit when you go to the other side and say, okay, set up office and make it work.
Yeah, and so what I would suggest, Leanne, is as Keith and Melissa build that full activation exercise of the EOC, just take a look and see how we can dovetail in our COOP COG and some kind of exercise along with that.
That'd be definitely workable.
Other questions for Leanne before we get to action?
I don't have any.
No. I just a tremendous compliment on the job well done. I can't imagine the number of hours that you put forth in pulling this all together.
Yep.
It's very impressive.
It's a really, really nice job, and we are, I think it's been pointed out rightly a couple times, we're never going to be all the way prepared. We're a lot more prepared than we were before going. Leanne and others going through this exercise of putting it together. This is one of those that you hope you never, ever, ever have to use for real. But if you ever do, you're better off having it than not. It's not a public hearing item, but I will turn and say, does anybody wish to comment on this before the board takes action? Now's your opportunity. You coming, Morris?
Yep.
Laura Solson, 1705 Buchanan, and I'm just going to weigh in also about what an excellent job this is. I have covered local communities and counties and boroughs in three different states, and this is one of the best, if not the best, I have ever seen. So I just want to go on the record that I think you're great. Very
well, we appreciate you on the record.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anybody else? All right, board, if there's nothing else, if there's no further questions, I'll turn to you for action on the COOP COG. Wayne?
Well, it's just a simple acknowledgement and approval of the plan that has been laid before us and look forward to all the training and everything that's going to become necessary. So I would move approval of the continuity of the operations plan as known as COOP COG.
Super.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve COOP COG that is in front of us as presented. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. COOP COG is now adopted.
I have one more slide.
Yep, go.
I'm anticipating adoption. There are a few things that will happen in the next few couple weeks. Final printing and distribution. Of all elected officials and department heads will get their own individual copy, and it is not the redacted version. They will get the entire confidential copy.
We just need to, in the printed version, we need to do a better job pointing out which portion. Maybe we can go ahead and highlight the ones that are not public information. It's a little hard to follow in our poll.
That is a good suggestion. As I mentioned, staff training for safety day tomorrow, bringing forward some plan, making sure the plan action steps are being managed, budgeting starting in December, and then further training as we go forward.
Perfect. As always, great job, Leanne. Thank you, Leanne. All right, that gets us down to public forum number two, an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that were not on today's agenda. We've already had Kathy Fromm address us. Is there anybody else who wishes to address us on something that's not on today's agenda? Seeing no one, moving immediately to the microphone. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Just had a brief meeting with Carla the other day, and because of the holiday, we didn't have our regular scheduled meeting, and we just, as usual, continue to be updated on some of the things that's happening with the governance board and some of the programs and services that are taking place there. So nothing really new to
mention.
Super. Marty.
Looking forward to hearing good things on COLO's Economic Development Committee meeting and their quest for affordable housing in their community, and I'm going to pass that.
Outstanding. Nothing for me. Announcements, Wayne.
No, I have a COSAR meeting on Friday. This is the County Strategic Technology Plan. Looking at who is going to receive the Excellent Action Award. We've gone through an evaluation of several projects from various counties, and so we will actually probably make that recommendation, and that award will be presented in the fall school. Then CERPA is, I'll be probably with Darren meeting on Thursday for the CERPA meeting, and we've got just a few things there that may be of interest to Story County in the future, but I'll know more after we have that meeting.
Perfect. Dean Nuffins.
I've got a follow-up meeting with the Boys and Girls Club tomorrow, and I can share my insights with Wayne, as he knows a lot more about it than I do when he has to speak. So nothing after that.
Very good. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Do I have to adjourn?
Yep.
All right. 9-2. We're adjourned.